This is Brother Peter Diamond, VaticanCatholic.com. I wanted to quickly answer a few questions and respond to a few comments that were sent in via email. A man named Jonah writes in. He mentions that he found the death video edifying. Perhaps he means the death and the journey into hell video. But then he goes on to criticize the severity with which we denounce actions and statements of the anti-popes. He also goes on to defend Warren Carroll's statement about the Bull Unum Sanctum that was covered in the last video. He says, quote, "I looked up the Bull Unum Sanctum you mentioned after watching the video about Warren Carroll, in which he is declared by you to be a heretic, and found that what he said seems to have no bearing on the content of the dogma, but rather on how the way it was written," that's what he says, "which is in no way guaranteed as perfect by papal authority," end quote. That is, frankly, a ridiculous statement. I'll quote again. Carroll says about the dogmatic definition in Unum Sanctum. He says, quote, "The great problem with this document comes in the last sentence, the last and worst example of Pope Boniface VIII's tendency to overstate." So referring to the specific line in which Boniface VIII declares that it is absolutely necessary that every human creature be subject to the Roman Pontiff for salvation, he says this is a great problem and an example of his tendency, quote, to overstate. And when you overstate something, that means that you exaggerate it. You state it too strongly. Is an infallible definition exaggerated? No, because when something is exaggerated, it's not stated correctly. It's not stated perfectly accurately. And a dogmatic definition, even though the words aren't necessarily inspired, is protected from exaggerations or statements that would be too strong and therefore not totally accurate. So his statement is heretical, and the fact that this guy is trying to defend it is just an example of dishonesty. And it's not surprising because in his email he also says that John Paul II and Benedict XVI have been unjustly attacked as false ecumenists, when I have received exactly the contrary impression, that they are champions of orthodoxy and sanity in both theology and philosophy. I mean, what can you do with a person like this? This is a guy who's just not of the truth. Benedict XVI, a champion of orthodoxy, teaches that non-Catholics can receive Holy Communion, teaches that the Eastern Orthodox are part of the Church. It's a fact. Embraces condemned heresy on religious liberty. Denies the historical accuracy of St. Matthew's Gospel. Teaches that Jews can be saved. Takes active part in Jewish worship. Agrees with the Lutherans on justification. Teaches that Protestants don't need conversion. Teaches that Vatican I is not binding upon Protestants or Eastern Court Orthodox. And on and on and on. A champion of orthodoxy. To a person who doesn't believe in Jesus Christ? To a liar? Yes. And it makes sense now why you can attempt to justify a clearly false and heretical statement from Warren Carroll in the way that you did. So that's one email I wanted to address. Another email from a woman who wanted us to withhold her name came in. She says, quote, "I'm very grateful for your information in exposing the counterfeit church. I have recently taken the Sede Vacante position. However, I am troubled when I go to some traditional Catholic forums and news websites and I see nothing but, quote, encouraging news of increases in traditional diocesan masses, increased interest in tradition, newly ordained Novus Ordo priests, who are looking at the traditions of the Church and rejecting Vatican II. The impression I'm getting is that there's truly a restoration and stirring in the Church. And then when we hear the SSPX coming out with statements such as there is new blood running through the veins of the Church, which causes an erosion in my confidence of the new position that I have taken, that of believing that the seat is empty, can you offer an opinion to strengthen my confidence? Thank you." Well, when we receive an email like this, I have to say that my first inclination is to say that I don't regard you as a real Catholic, because someone who would be swayed from the conviction that Benedict XVI is not a Catholic and therefore not a Pope, based on the fact that various false traditionalists are saying that they see some kind of stirring in the Novus Ordo Church, is someone who really lacks foundational faith in Jesus Christ. Allow me to put it this way. If Benedict XVI abolished the new mass, if the seminaries under him started to teem with new members, if he instituted the most rigid liturgical regulations and had the most beautiful traditional Latin masses, it would make no difference, and it shouldn't sway one's conviction that he's an anti-pope in the smallest way. He's a man who embraces countless heresies. There's hardly a doctrine of the faith he has not denied. He doesn't even believe in the historical accuracy of St. Matthew's gospel. He praises the mission of Jews. He takes active part in Jewish worship. Anyone who sees this information, who claims to believe in the necessity of Jesus Christ, and that's why that is really the foundational faith, if you lack conviction in the necessity of Christ and in the necessity of his faith, you won't be able to see clearly on anything. It doesn't matter. He could have Latin masses said everywhere. It would make no difference. He's not a Catholic. He believes in salvation outside the church. That alone proves he's not Pope. And that's why we say that when a person sees the evidence of their false ecumenism and their heresies, I'll give the example of John Paul II. Once you see the evidence of what he's done, you should immediately be repulsed by him. If you're not, you're not really of Christ. It might take some time and looking over the arguments to work out the details about loss of office, etc. But if you're not immediately repulsed by him as an antichrist, as a faithless, wicked man who embraces things that are contrary to the gospel, you're just not of Christ. It's just that simple. And that's one of the things I think that gets lost in a lot of these false traditionalist groups, CMRI, SSPX. They spend a lot of time trying to cultivate devotion to liturgical exactitude, etc. Meanwhile, these people don't even believe in Jesus Christ. They believe Jews can be saved. They believe Hindus can be saved, Buddhists. If they spent actually more time reading the gospel and getting to know what Jesus laid down as the core features of Christianity, then they might more quickly arrive at the true faith. So, I don't know. When you read an email like this, you just have to say, you have a faith problem. You need to pray for the grace of faith. And I would also recommend that you stop wasting your time on forums where you have all these wicked people who, many of them don't pray. They're faithless. They're filled with human respect. They're compromised every which way you can imagine. And so they send out their compromised, perverted, diluted views, and it misleads people. You shouldn't be swayed by that whatsoever. And you talk about a stirring in the Novus Ordo Church. That is a shocking statement. We recently saw the gay, quote, marriage law pass in New York with the tacit approval of the so-called Bishop of Albany, the local, quote, priest in that area, and Benedict XVI, because they allow the man who signed it into law to receive, quote, communion. Call up your local Novus Ordo parish and just ask the priest a few questions. Ask him what he believes on outside the church there is no salvation. Ask him what he believes on the eternal fate of Muslims and Jews and Protestants. Ask him if he believes that Protestants are heretics and outside the church. Ask him if he believes that people who reject Jesus Christ are lost, and you'll see how much of the Catholic faith they actually hold. Again, the focus has to be on the faith first, not on externals. If you're not convinced that Benedict XVI is an antichrist when you see him praising Judaism, I mean, what else do you need to see? And that's part of the deception why he is a false prophet, although it really shows you how merciful the Lord is, because Benedict XVI is the false prophet, and we believe the evidence points in that direction. He's not even deceiving. But I guess because people so lack supernatural faith and they're so persuaded by externals, the fact that he can pretend to be conservative or say a few conservative things while he pushes full steam ahead with apostasy, or the fact that he can come out with a new translation of the Protestant invalid Novus Ordo service, that's all they need to see, and they will accept him no matter what else he says, no matter how many utterances of heresy he makes, no matter how many dogmas he denies. They don't care. That just shows you how shallow they are. So, to increase your conviction, I would just say, take a look again at the heresies of this guy. Start to believe in Jesus. Start to believe that the church is supernatural, not natural. That's the biggest problem we have today. We have almost no one who believes the church is supernatural. For most of these false traditionalists even, as long as there's a guy in Rome in robes, no matter what he believes, he could believe anything. As long as he's regarded as the Pope in robes in there, they're going to accept him because it's a purely natural view of the church. They do not believe that the church is governed by and operating under supernatural principles that are not seen. ipso facto excommunication, etc. Even though many of the traditionalists who read our stuff know that he's denied the historical accuracy of St. Matthew's Gospel, that's a fact, they don't care, because he gets up there in robes, and that's why Pope Paul the Fourth bull is so critical. He says that all the cardinals could regard the guy as a pope. If he's a heretic, he's not the pope. So I would pray for some faith in Jesus Christ, because that's what you lack. The next email I want to talk about is a question about having non-Catholic friends. Sylvester writes in, "To what extent is it okay for Catholics to have non-Catholic friends or acquaintances? Last week I had a falling out with my heretical anti-Catholic co-worker. I had been discussing Catholicism with her. She uttered many blasphemies against God and against the Blessed Virgin. She bases everything on sola scriptura and dismisses papal and infallible teaching. I offered her your book, The Bible Proves the Teachings of the Catholic Church. She declined, and he asks about this issue." And what we would say in response is that a couple of distinctions should be made. First, if you have a family, then I would say that really there's not much need to have people who you would consider friends who are not Catholic. Obviously, you should try to convert those people you know, try to bring them to the faith in charity. But I think this question is more directed for single individuals, and maybe young people. And since it sounds like the friend you're referring to here is a woman, I would say that since she's rejected the faith and you've tried to convert her, I would avoid, as a young man, having a friendship of that nature, even if it's not geared toward dating with a woman. Now, what about, could you have a friend or acquaintance who is a non-Catholic, who's a man, if you're a man? And I would say, yes, if you can do things that you consider to be recreational with that individual, provided those things are innocuous. For example, if you have a non-Catholic friend or acquaintance with whom you could play ping pong, or basketball, or Monopoly, or something else that you like to do that's a source of recreation for you, and you've tried to convert him, but he's not interested, you could do those kinds of things with that individual because it provides a source of recreation for you. And it's important to have recreational diversions. And we've noticed that with people who do not have recreational diversion, they wind up filling the vacuum with attachment to creatures, getting involved with following heretical individuals and groups, wasting their time gossiping about others, whereas they would be much better served if they could find a recreation in which they could remain alone, or at least in which the activity is the focus of the recreation, rather than other people, other families, human relationships, etc. The problem with individuals who seek out gossip or human relationships or other families to fill up their recreational need is that it frequently happens that those other families and that need for community feeling draws them into heretical positions or moves them away from their convictions. Whereas if they were satisfied engaging in an activity by themselves, they wouldn't need to seek out those people, and they would remain more firmly rooted in God. We've seen it occur many times where people who hold the correct positions because they spend time with other families who are weak in the faith or heretical, it slowly but surely weakens them and sometimes draws them away from the positions altogether. Moreover, the more one reliant is on creatures, the less connected one is to God. That's why a recreation in which you can be by yourself or in which the activity is the focus is preferable to one in which the relationship is the focus. Now, obviously, various situations can come up and people have to evaluate those, and so these are just some general guidelines. One last thing that I wanted to mention is that I recently came across an interesting quote from St. Augustine. He was commenting on the eternity of the Son of God, our Lord Jesus Christ. As Catholics know, the Father gave birth from all eternity to the Son. The Son proceeded from all eternity from the Father. As Jesus says in John 8:42, quote, "If God were your Father, you would indeed love me, for from God I proceeded and came." End quote. Yet the Father does not precede the Son in time. For as long as the Father was the Father, the Son was the Son. They are co-eternal and co-equal. And to illustrate the eternity of the Son of God, how he could have been begotten by the Father, yet co-eternal with the Father, St. Augustine makes some very interesting comments. He says, quote, "Now no one doubts that brightness proceeds from fire. Fire, then, we may consider the father of the brightness. Presently, when I light a candle, at the same instant with the fire, brightness arises. Give me the fire without the brightness, and I, with thee, will believe that the Father was without the Son." So he points out that just as brightness proceeds from fire, fire is the father of the brightness, yet there is never an instant in which the fire exists without the brightness. So that was an analogy concerning the eternity of God the Son. And obviously, when speaking of mysteries such as the Trinity and the Incarnation, analogies, of course, do not do them justice, but I thought that that was a tremendous point.